in Boshammer Stadium. And that little tidbit of information is how you get around the fact that you screwed up at the beginning of the sentence and said high school when it should have been UNC. But I know when the season begins and where and who they're playing, that I get points for that, right?
Absolutely.
Good.
We are still a little ways out from baseball. So you get full credit for knowing
full points
when the season starts and who they're playing.
That's good.
Because to think about anything other than basketball right now is a lot.
That's also
in terms
true.
Of the sports world around here.
We've got Blake Hodge, WCHL News Director.
What's up?
Here in the studio. How are you? It's the end of the week.
Know,
it's good.
It's one of those days.
I just saw Call Me By Your Name. Everyone should see it.
I just saw the Board of Governors meeting. Everyone, you know, you can see it if you want
My experience was more entertaining.
Probably.
And
mine
probably
was longer.
Probably a lot prettier.
Mine was longer.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And they kicked me out for a large portion of the meeting. They do it to everybody. It's the
closed
session.
Right, yeah.
But there's a lot of waiting around.
None of my movie was in closed session.
Do they make you leave the theater and then bring you back in at an undisclosed time to wrap up the thing?
No, they don't. They let you stay in and watch the entire thing from start to finish. It's great.
Not happen
it's their really fancy silver spot experience where you can see the entire thing. Cool. So the Board of Governors met earlier today with a couple of things on the agenda.
Yes.
One of which was like not even a thing on the agenda, but kind of the thing that made headlines was this kind of dust up between Lou Bissett and Bob Rucha, right?
So this originated with an op-ed that was published by Lou Bissett, chair of the Board of Governors. It was published in the Charlotte Observer and I believe also published in the sister paper here in Raleigh in the News and Observer, talking about what he intended it to be based on what he said today is a year in review of the Board of Governors. And it came out, you know, around that time in December where that would make sense. The headline, I need to actually pull this up. I should have done that before. The headline was BOG chair, and then it had in quotes, "We should stay out of politics," or something like that.
Right.
Now, that is something that is of a lot of interest if that were to be what he said, because of the moves that the board has taken in recent months and years that some would view as very political and some view as just setting university policy, you know, depending on who you're asking there. And we're coming off of the Center for Civil Rights being not closed, but banning them from entering into litigation.
But the Poverty Center before
Poverty
that
Center,
actually being
you know,
closed,
the review of all those centers before.
Yeah.
The free speech policy you know, it could even be kind of thrown into that same...
And like pushback from the board on Silent Sam as well.
Yeah.
So there's
so,
that going on,
you know,
too.
So all of those things... everything is political in some way or
also
another.
True.
So trying
to
find a definitive line separating what's university policy versus what's political in a politically charged world on a board made up of political appointees.
Right.
Even if you're trying your
hardest
to just
set
policy.
Where there's
policy,
conflict over a government policy, that by definition is political, right?
So this is not an elected board. It is an appointed board, but they are appointed by people who are elected. So you know, you can get there however you would like to get there. Lou wrote an op-ed that he said was intending to say a little bit about what the university system has accomplished over the last year in their mind and what the priorities are in terms of providing the best possible public education at the lowest possible price. Some of those things that you know, are reoccurring themes through these discussions and getting the strategic framework in place to move forward and things that happened over the last year that he felt like he wanted to highlight. There were a few lines in it that were saying, you know, the board shouldn't think about being in the day-to-day management of the universities. Mm-hmm. It should be a little more kind of 30,000 foot view of
policy
making
instead of micromanaging,
like that.
Right.
And that has come up, you know, whenever some board members and you know, you've got a new slate of board members that were put on the board this year, and the board is shrinking in size thanks to new legislation. So there's a lot of changes going on with the board, and some in that new wave of board members have taken a more active role in wanting, it seems like, to be involved in some of more those, what in years past would have seemed like kind of smaller decisions. But anyway, like what came across in that seems to be the political part that was in the headline. And as Chairman Bissett pointed out today, that what was in the headline as a quote isn't actually in the op-ed anywhere. So it seems to have, it certainly caught attention whenever it came out with that headline. And, you know, anytime that a board chair writes something, an op-ed in a publication like The Observer, is going to draw attention, of course.
Right.
That's why you do it.
That's headline writing as well, right? Like, you take the 10% that is controversial and you make that the headline, and the 90% that isn't controversial is for people to read when they click on the story.
You know, right? And issues with that being the quotes, you know, if it's not actually quoted,
it's not quoted in the
article. Come across as putting that in the headline. But yeah, I mean, you're writing a headline trying to make it enticing for people to click on. Bob Rucho today, who was a former state senator, now on the Board of Governors, during the chairman's report, Lou said, we're going to talk about something that Bob and I have had some, he said, heated conversations. And sometimes whenever he's saying things like that, it's very tongue-in-cheek. Today, you could tell it was a little more truth to that kind of statement than previous times. And Bob brought up that several members of the board wanted to know why Lou had written something like that without consulting the board, you know, trying to not trying to be the what they viewed as the voice of the entire board. And Lou's response was, we all have, you know, even just basic freedom of speech rights, we don't lose those whenever we come to the board. And he pointed to other members of the board. Vice Chair Harry Smith did an extended interview with a radio station in the eastern part of the state. Other people, Marty Kotis is frequently quoted in media, and Tom Fetzer, even in just a few months on the board, has been quoted numerous times in media. So he was saying, y'all aren't coming to me before y'all go or quoted in these media outlets, and I wrote something that was trying to be a year-in-review piece that the headline kind of got some attention there, but He was saying throughout the thing that the equal members of the board, it was like an intentional effort.
And he was not
that,
like, speaking on behalf of the board. He's writing an op-ed for himself.
But I asked him afterward, you are the chair of the board, so is there more weight to your statements because you are the chair of the board?
I mean,
we've seen that at the local level here where we have, you know, Mark Dorison now, but Earl McKee before as the chair of the commissioners would always say that. Either I'm speaking for myself, or, you know, I can't speak for the whole board. You know, some sort of qualification.
At least make it clear that you're making it clear, right?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it seemed like that was a little bit of a thing. But more than anything, this seems to kind of drive at some of the tensions that are, or I shouldn't say are, I'm not on the board, seem to be prevalent among board members in terms of new appointees that have come on and seem to either be operating with a more direct feeling of a mandate from the General Assembly to carry X out as a member of the board or whatever the case may be there. So it's something to continue watching more than anything going into the future. Lou Bissett, remember, was elected to be chair of the board to a full kind of cycle on this chairmanship after John Fenebresque abruptly resigned from the board following the hiring of Margaret Spellings that he led as the chair of the board at that point. And he was a bit more of a flamethrower as a board chair, whereas Lou has been a little more of a kind of a steady hand and trying to build consensus on things, it seems like, from an observer's standpoint. So I think it'll be really interesting to see if, you know, during the next cycle here coming up over the next few months, what the leadership looks like, if Lou wants to / you know, is in the running to take another turn there as board chair, or if there's a little bit of a shift and what that shift could mean for the board and the direction that the board is going to move, both in terms of work and style of what they're trying to carry out.
So. Speaking with Blake Hodge, WCHL News Director, who was at the Board of Governors meeting earlier today, and that was kind of off the agenda. What was on the agenda that the board members discussed?
So they had a few things. Yesterday they had policy discussion talking about transferability of community college students and hours to the university, the four-year universities in the system, trying to figure out a way to make them, make transfer students most successful and, you know, not losing, you know, it's thinking about it in a couple of ways, not losing a student there that has the potential for whatever the case may be, or whatever, you know, their potential is, whatever they would like to do, but also not losing the investment on behalf of the system, the community college, and the student and what they've invested in there, especially at a time when we're talking about student debt at a rate that we are in North Carolina and across the country. So had a little bit of that policy discussion. Nothing really decided today. Two things that got the most attention today was the first one being the surgical tower here at UNC Chapel Hill that has been proposed and was approved and, you know, is moving along in terms of where they're going to build that down at the hospital campus there. But the parking deck for that hospital, for the surgical tower, they're having to get rid of surface level parking. They're going to build a parking deck there. And who is going to pay for that was a point of contention for a little while today, because right now it had been slated to be paid for out of the transportation funds, which basically all of, you know, if you try to park anywhere near campus, if you're even if you're a university employee, they pay for spaces, and all this goes into the transportation fund. And while you're parked at the hospital or whatever the case, all this is going into this fund to pay for different projects across the campus. And Marty Kotis, a board member, pulled this from the consent agenda today to talk about it a little more. He wanted the money to come from the UNC healthcare system, the hospital, rather than the transportation
what
funds.
What was the rationale for that?
I mean, because student funds and things go into the parking, the transportation fund. So saying, we, you know, Marty's typical line is we have a constitutional obligation to provide a free public education to the nearest extent practicable for North Carolina residents.
So taking student fees and using it to do a healthcare thing.
Right. So that was his logic on that. You know, and there's a lot of back and forth on the board of whether this was a discussion with the way that this ultimately was going to break down, whether it warranted the amount of discussion it got today. Eventually, Bill Roper, the dean of the School of Medicine, CEO of UNC Healthcare, stood up several times trying to provide some input. Matt Fajak, who is, forget his official title, he's and had all the money at UNC up until Monday when Jonathan Pruitt takes over.
Yeah.
They were saying,
head of all the money
the,
is a great thing to put on his business cards anyway.
They were talking about the what policy has been in terms of how much to spend on a parking deck and what the limits are going to be in terms of on all these things. And ultimately, it turns out, of course, that site is one of the most congested areas in all of Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. It is being built over a place where there's a lot of utilities and things underground, so they're having to deal with all these things. And it's an expensive project for a parking deck at the end of the day.
Right.
Bill Roper at the end stood up and said, we don't want the project to be delayed more than anything else. We can't have it be delayed until March before we get approval just to go on with what we were doing today. So we'll pay for it. And that was basically what it said.
Cool.
And then work it out with the university, however, to get the money recouped or back to a certain level, whatever ultimately is decided. So that's going forward after much more discussion than was anticipated today at the Board of Governors. And then Del Falwell, the state treasurer, gave a presentation today, wide-ranging presentation. This happens all the time. This is kind of somebody comes in and gives a presentation for every Board of Governors meeting, and it was his turn today. And he started talking about health care costs and things like that. So, of course, one board member brought up the partnership. It's a partnership if Bill Roper's talking, it's a merger if anybody else is talking.
It's not technically
a merger, but UNC Healthcare and Carolina's healthcare system talking about joining forces for this new entity.
And Carolina's healthcare has an extra $1.7 million here, according to this Medicare story. They can use that to build it.
Not for long. It's
okay.
Like.
Yeah, that's true.
So they asked, well, from a treasurer's standpoint, what are your thoughts on that? This is an interesting discussion because we know so few public details about this proposal.
But one of the things that we do know is that Blue Cross Blue Shield is opposed to it because they think their costs are going to end up going up.
Well,
and a number of board members on the Board of Governors are affiliated with Blue Cross. So
this is an unbelievable little thing to watch every time. They had six people. First off, there were a few people out today, maybe five or so that were out today. Six people who were there recused themselves from this.
So do they have to stand up and leave, or do they
they just
step
don't
back
participate
from the
in the conversation. Because everybody has some interest in this. They are a lobbyist for Wake Med, or they lobby for Blue Cross Blue Shield, or they're involved with Wake Forest, or, you know, whatever.
Well, it's any healthcare provider or distributor or hospital
so
is going to be involved in this in some way.
So very few, not very few, but a smaller section of the board is even eligible to comment on
what do you think reason. Because you're the only one who at the end of the day, like, it's gonna be like King Ralph where everyone has to recuse themselves and then it's down to
but you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield came out against this saying they believe that it will raise costs, but again, we know virtually no detail. Mm-hmm. They're basing that off of other places. Mergers have equaled higher cost in some cases. The response that we've gotten from Margaret Spellings earlier in the week, the UNC system president, who also has a seat on the UNC healthcare board in that position as the UNC system president, saying that she does believe this is good for the people of North Carolina in terms of providing the best care possible at the lowest cost possible, but also saying this isn't a merger in, it's not an in-market monopoly merger. It's mm-hmm. not UNC healthcare merging with Wake Med type of situation, or you know, whatever type you want to talk. This is a mainly triangle-based hospital agency and a mainly Charlotte and to the south-based hospital agency joining, that's going to have a wide reach and not necessarily cancel right. each other out in the same market.
That's a fair point, but at the same time, it does make for one very large entity
very
that's going to have a lot of control over and setting prices and costs
right.
for everyone.
And you've got And Blue Cross Blue Shield, of course, is massive in its
own
right. So to have these types of moving parts is going to make this a very long, drawn-out process. You can be pretty sure of that.
So does the Board of Governors have the authority to nix the whole deal
That's
if they want
question.
To?
That's a great question. Nobody knows.
Okay, good.
That was the question. That was the question that we asked on Wednesday to Margaret Spellings. There's a lot of gray area over who has the ultimate say, yes or no, on this proposal. Is it the hospital board? Is it in their affiliation, the Board of Governors? Is it, you know, and then this is going to, if a deal is reached, if it's approved at the local level, I'm saying local meaning really state level, it's still going to have to go to the FTC at mm-hmm. the federal level to get approval. The response that we got from Spellings on Wednesday, and she is quick to defer in this case to Bill Roper and people from Carolina's Health in terms of those actually putting this together. She is the president of the system, but only a board member on the healthcare part of this, so let's remember that. Mm. She was saying, at the end of the day, they all have a similar goal, which is to work toward that best healthcare available at the lowest lowest cost available.
Yeah.
So she doesn't seem to think that's going to be the sticking point on mm-hmm. this, because everybody's trying to get to the same thing. I think it's more interesting how many people have to recuse themselves from the conversation that are at that decision-making level because of very blatant conflicts.
I do appreciate it. I teach American government at Durham Tech, and I do appreciate, I'm simultaneously frustrated and a little bit unnerved, but also very relieved as a teacher of American government at the extent to which the answer I don't know is actually the correct yeah. answer to a lot of questions about American government.
It's like it's hard to, people want to know about this. It's a massive deal.
Yeah.
It's going to affect business, healthcare, insurance. It's going to affect so many things. And we know very few details on this. One thing that we do know is that, well, there's no timeline at this point, so this isn't seemingly going to get kind of put together and moved quickly by any means. So mm-hmm. we'll see how this progresses. But as of now, the Board of Governors has a subcommittee that is looking at this and getting as much information as they can to ultimately report back to the full board. So we'll have to wait and see what type of information they get. The main part of the discussion about the healthcare proposal today was held in closed session, as we kind of expect it to be for the near future.
Blake Hodge, thank you so much.